Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week. We're here to run down the top news from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. On today's show, we'll hear from Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with his Indiana farm forecast. Soybean futures rallied a bit this week. Market analysis is on the way with our Andy Eubank. And in the news, some lawmakers are gearing up for a tough fight on the farm bill. We'll hear from one of them how woodland on your farm can be an asset and bring you some extra cash. A crop update coming from the Fort Wayne area, and we'll put a bow on our coverage from the Indiana State Fair that wrapped up last weekend. Let's begin with the weather. Triple-digit heat found Indiana and much of the Corn Belt this past week, and there's been a lot of speculation about what that might do to the crops out there. Hoosier Ag Today Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin says Thursday was the pinnacle of the heat, with temperatures moving lower going into the weekend. Perhaps the bigger story, though, is the lack of precipitation in his forecast now through Labor Day weekend.
No good rains. Now, when we're talking about good rains, I'm talking about 80-90% coverage of the state. Everybody's seeing at least a quarter of an inch. Nothing like that in our forecast through Labor Day now. So it's going to be into September before we see some meaningful rain.
Parts of northern Indiana did see some rain throughout the week, but Martin says
those rains in the northern part of the state, a lot of them here, at least as of late, as the heat was going away, were heat-based convection, so very hit and miss. So, you know, northeast Indiana may be picking up a deluge of rain, but you get over into Elkhart County, Kosciuszko County, central part of the state, those totals falling off quicker, even northwest Indiana, not seeing a whole lot. So a lot of areas getting missed, and that's why we're talking about good rains being a ways out. I just don't see good coverage in here in the short term.
Martin, who also farms in northern Indiana, says of crop conditions following the heat wave this week,
I honestly don't think this current round of heat has taken anything off the top. I think what was taken off the top of this crop happened back in June. I don't think that we hurt these crops at all. I think we're the exact same place we were before it got hot this past week.
If you stick with us, Martin's full Indiana farm forecast is on the way here on Hoosier Ag This Week. The Indiana State Fair wrapped up last Sunday night, but not before one of the top 4-H competitions was held last weekend. C.J. Miller has more.
This has been a very big goal of mine. I'm definitely a little shaky.
And that's Isaac Thompson of Boone County. The 9-year 4-H member took home top prize of Supreme Champion in the 4-H Supreme Showmanship Competition Friday night. The event features two 4-H representatives from each barn, cattle, sheep, goats, and swine, who demonstrate their talents in showing several species of livestock.
This has been so long in the making for me. I've really been working hard at it, and it's just been something that now that finally to get here and to hear my name be called over that speaker was just amazing, and nothing like I can really describe.
Isaac says he's had his eye on the prize since he was a little boy.
Ever since I was young, before I was even in 4-H, we always would go and watch Supreme Showmanship at the county fair, and I thought that was always was amazing, and like just the whole concept of showing everything, and showmanship's always been something that I could really work hard at, and it doesn't matter how good my animals were or how or just like the quality of the animal, as long as I put the time and the effort into it, I would see those benefits.
He adds that he couldn't have won the 4-H competition without the help of his family and friends.
I just really want to say thank you to Mom and Dad and the whole crew. I mean, it takes a village, even though there's only one showman in the ring, whether the show or showmanship, but like it back at home and everything, like working and feeding the sheep, just taking care of everything. It's been a village of people, so I just want to say thank you to that village.
Caden Johnson of Boone County was your reserve champion, and you can watch Hoosier Ag Today's video featuring highlights of the 4-H Supreme Showmanship Competition at the Indiana State Fair, presented by First Farmers Bank and Trust, at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
Thank you, C.J. And to put some numbers on this year's Indiana State Fair, it was the 166th year, and despite navigating very challenging weather, State Fair attendance this year reached 840,414, a slight increase over last year, and over 6,700 4-H exhibitors showed or displayed a combined nearly 50,000 animal and non-animal projects. We'll see you at next year's fair.
The U.S. Trade Representative's office is moving forward regarding Mexico banning the import of U.S. biotech corn. They've established a dispute resolution panel under procedures within the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Dave Salmonson, Senior Government Affairs Director with Farm Bureau, explains.
This will deal with the issues brought up by Mexico's decrees, which seek to stop the import of U.S. corn products produced with biotechnology. The U.S. believes this is a violation to the sanitary standards provisions of the USMCA and has brought this case.
The issue revolves around Mexican decrees against U.S. corn products produced with biotechnology, specifically glyphosate.
Recent decrees earlier in 2023 said that they were going to move ahead to stop the import of white corn, but would allow the imports of U.S. yellow corn until they could find some alternatives. The U.S. has objected to these decrees all along, saying that they're not scientifically based, and has been talking with the Mexican government all along, but especially ramped up the discussions last year.
In an interview earlier this year with Hoosier Ag Today, former USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs Ted McKinney told us these decrees from Mexico just don't make much sense, and Mexican President Obrador should rethink his stance.
There's just no turning away from sourcing a product like we have, particularly yellow corn. And if they want to start transitioning to non-GM, okay, let's get the signals to do that, and we'll happily do that. But then it's so expensive for his people. So he's got to redo his calculus, to be very honest.
Salmonson says a resolution could come early next year, following technical consultations this year. More farm news on the way here on Hoosier Ag This Week, but right now let's turn our attention to the markets. Andy Eubank is here, and Andy, we saw soybeans rally this week.
Thanks, Eric, and yes, soybeans led the way, mostly higher throughout the week. That's how the market ended the week as well, and that's where I began my conversation with Brian Basting, Advanced Trading, who took a closer look at what kind of a week it was for soy futures.
The crop conditions, as your listeners know, Andy, are expected to deteriorate this week. It's just a really rough week for everyone involved in agriculture, especially crops, looking at some pod filling challenges this week with pushing 100 degrees. The heat index is well over 100 degrees. The market, as you said, has responded to the upside here. We've also had a bit of export business, Andy. China has come in here and bought a few more beans. So enough just uncertainty lurking about here to give us some new buying, perhaps, and some short covering ahead of the weekend. Fortunately, it looks like the weather forecast is breaking this weekend in terms of temperatures. I'm not sure how much rainfall we're going to get, but up until now, you're right, this week has been led by the beans and led by the strength in terms of expectations for crop deterioration and the crop ratings on Monday.
Corn market has had some trouble getting some traction, and certainly wheat, it seems, has been a part of that, as it has moved mostly lower throughout the week.
Yeah, you summarized that well, Andy. Wheat has been just a lack of demand. We just haven't seen much export demand materialize here. We continue to see Russia be a factor in the world markets. Exporting, obviously, the Black Sea situation is extremely volatile, but in terms of volume of U.S. exports, it's minimal at the moment, so we're not seeing that push in wheat. Some of these yields for soft red winter as the crop harvest was finished here a week or two ago were exceptional, off the charts in some cases in terms of record yields, so ample supplies of soft wheat.
Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. The number there is 309-664-2314. On the Hat Friday Farm Market Review, sideways trade in corn, and September ends down a penny and a half, 470 and three quarters, down a quarter cent on both December and March contracts. December settles at 488. November beans, a different story, 1387 and three quarters, a 16-cent pickup. January up 15 and three quarters, 1399 and a quarter. September wheat down a dime and three quarters, going to 593 and a quarter. Meat markets mostly higher. October live cattle, 181.17, up 45. October lean hogs, 79.82, down 65. The deferred contracts did go just a tad higher. That's the market review here on the Weekend Show. And there is much more to come. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Cooler and less humid air is on the way. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. Taking a look at the activity coming together here, honestly, after last week's heat dome and all the talk surrounding it, it's going to be nice to settle into a week here that we're dealing with near normal temperatures, even below normal temperatures, and not nearly as much humidity. That's probably the biggest thing this week. Humidity values are pulling down. Now, yesterday, you know, it was still warm. And it was very humid. Today, for your Saturday, we have a little frontal complex trying to slide through. Part of it's lingering moisture from the exit of the heat dome a couple of days ago, and part of it's just this clean out front that's going to come through. So I'm saying from morning through midday, I'm not going to rule out hit and misses, scattered showers. Large part of this front started to impact the area early this morning already. So yeah, hit and miss, scattered showers, few hundreds to a few tenths, only about 40% coverage today. But what this front is doing is actually just clearing everything out. Our temperatures will pull back a little bit from yesterday. Humidity high here to start, but pulling back through the afternoon. And then I look for us to have a beautiful Sunday in all parts of the state. Sunshine, blue sky, comfortable temperatures, low humidity. Very nice setup at all overall for your Sunday. And that holds through Monday. Overnight Monday night into Tuesday, got another minor trough trying to slide through the Great Lakes, mostly having an impact on Michigan, but I think we have to allow for some hit and miss scattered showers Tuesday midday and afternoon over the northern third of Indiana. Could give us a few hundreds to a few tenths. Coverage about 40% from US 24 north. You get south of US 24, we probably don't see much, but look for this front to trigger some cloud cover. And again, that resets the atmosphere for the second half of next week. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, beautiful. Lower temperatures, honestly, I think we're going to be about 3 to 6 degrees below normal for the second half of next week. Low humidity, very nice, comfortable setup as we finish out the month of August. Now, temperatures start to climb a little bit going into the Labor Day holiday weekend. Not out of control, but definitely warmer. Humidity values will rise as well, but I don't think get to the oppressive levels that we saw this past week, but we are definitely going to be warmer for the Memorial Day weekend. Temperatures above normal, particularly for the 3rd and Labor Day itself on the 4th. I think we go into that following week then, and honestly, I don't see a lot of moisture there either. There is a front, a mostly dry front, that extends all the way from the Arrowhead of Minnesota back down into eastern Colorado for Labor Day the 4th, but it's going to have to tap into some kind of moisture source if it's going to do anything here. I'm Ryan Martin.
Diesel engines can lose power and fuel efficiency as dirt, grime, and carbon deposits collect over time. Say hello to the future. Lasting power and performance are here. Premium Diesel X4 now includes ProFlow, a unique and powerful combination of fuel detergents that remove and prevent new carbon deposits from forming. Get more per gallon with the diesel fuel of the future. Get Premium Diesel X4 with ProFlow from Countrymark.
We're running down the top news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. Many agree that Indiana crops this year, for the most part, are really looking pretty good. Luke Hesterman, who covers the Fort Wayne area as a field sales representative for Specialty Hybrid, says this corn crop right now is as clean as he's seen it in 10 years.
In the last 2 to 3 weeks, planes have been flying. Highboy sprayers have been covering acres and getting fungicide put on, so guys are definitely trying to mitigate risk and protect this crop and get all the bushel they can out of it.
That includes tar spot, which Hesterman says he hasn't seen a whole lot of at this point. The same can be said for Specialty Hybrid's soybeans in the Fort Wayne area. Growers have been putting on fungicide and insecticide to protect potential yield.
We haven't seen a lot of feeding there. Seen a little bit of white mold, sudden death. That's a little farther to the west, and it's pretty spotty.
Hesterman adds that Mother Nature has been pretty kind to us this season, with the exception of the dryness toward the end of planting season. But the extreme heat and dry conditions this week are leaving crops wanting for a drink of water.
I'd say trend line right now, we've probably got an average to above average crop, but it's all going to hinge on this next month. We've got a ways before it's going to be in the bin, and we need a few more rains to really bring this thing home.
Even though we're not yet to harvest, Hesterman knows farmers are already thinking about seed decisions for next year. He has some things to consider for next planting season.
We've been using a lot of VT2P double pro corn across a lot of acres, and we are starting to see a little bit of corn borer pressure coming back. So guys need to start taking a look at what's going to be the best protection for their acres where they got corn and corn on corn, and you know, some of these newer products with their newer breeding, they're moving the yield up exponentially with new launches, and we're bringing them up, you know, 3 to 5 years faster than we ever have. So those farmers know their farms better than anybody. So getting together and talking about what's going to be the best game plan right now to lock in early cash discounts would be ideal, and then we'll monitor things as we move through harvest.
You can learn more about specialty hybrids at specialtyhybrids.com. There's just over a month until the current farm bill expires, and some lawmakers are gearing up for a tough fight. Our Sabrina Halverson speaks with one.
Florida Republican Congresswoman Kat Kamick spoke at the Sweetener Symposium held in California last week and said she's expecting a battle over the farm bill. In an interview with us this week, she explained some of the issues she sees. First,
certainly the price tag. That's, I think, first and foremost, the cause for concern for my colleagues on the right. For my colleagues on the left, the price tag is not enough.
And that's not the only issue. She said every farm bill has a battle over the nutrition title, which is about 80% of the bill and goes to programs such as SNAP and WIC. But that's not all.
I think you're going to have niche groups fighting over niche issues, which ultimately makes the path to a very successful and productive farm bill very difficult.
She said another factor that complicates the farm bill is the regionality of it. Each of the nation's growing regions has different crops and different needs.
No one wants to undercut someone else's program to benefit their own, but there has to be a balance. There has to be some form of equal representation and assistance throughout the farm bill for every different region. Because if you look, like I said, the Midwest is a great example for how they differ in different parts, but look at the Southeast compared to the Northwest. Completely different. You know, we're not producing apples, they are. And they have a totally different subset of issues than we do.
Still, she says it's an important piece of legislation, a fact that will help get it passed.
The thing that the chairman, as well as members of the committee, have continued to push for within their own spheres of influence was this is a national security bill. This isn't just a farm bill. This is a national security bill because we need to start talking about agriculture as a national security concern. So if people can see it through that lens, I think then they can maybe start to come around on some of the finer points.
I'm Sabrina Halverson.
Thank you, Sabrina. While regenerative agriculture systems are a valuable way to conserve soil and reduce inputs, there can still be some challenges. Elise Koning gives you a taste of what you'll hear on the latest HAT Soil Health Podcast.
Vandenberg County farmers Pat Bittner and his father John Bittner have used a regenerative ag system on their farm with success. But alongside success can also come challenges. They share those challenges on the latest episode of the HAT Soil Health Podcast, brought to you by the Conservation Cropping Systems Initiative. Pat says one of those challenges is planting a cover crop early enough.
We chase the combine, but it's just the seasons. You know, we plant by temperature, so we're not trying to be the first ones out there. We've never had a cover crop failure, but we'd like it taller going into the dormant season over winter to stop residue from shifting and things like that and armor the soil during the winter months.
Pat adds that having a mentor is essential to make a regenerative ag system work.
The challenges that a lot of people experience where they think they try it and they say, well, this doesn't work, they don't ever do it again. A lot of that is because they tried it without either A, talking to another regenerative farmer who's been doing it for a while, or taking the time to learn this system. It is a system, no different than conventional is a system. You can't pick and choose the parts and pieces of a system and expect it to work.
Pat's father, John, says it's worth reflecting on the value of a farm to help guide your production decisions.
Well, I've always thought of a farm as like a diamond. And so I think you look at your farm as, how long did it take to make that topsoil? Is it precious? Should we take care of it? Am I working with nature, or am I doing something here and burning up the soil in my lifetime or within a short period of time?
The Bittners are joined on the podcast by Gibson County farmers Aaron Kruger and his grandpa Ronald Kruger. You can hear more insight and wisdom in the HAT Soil Health Podcast at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Elise Koning.
When it comes to your corn seed purchase for next year's growing season, you might want to consider AgriGold, based right here in Indiana. C.J. Miller has more on their family of corn hybrids.
AgriGold has a unique setup called their Field GX system, which is six different genetic families of corn hybrids. Kirsten Garriott, the National Agronomy Lead with AgriGold, describes their Field GX system.
What it does is it allows farmers to get to know their products better and manage them more effectively, because Field GX groups our hybrids based on their performance under different types of management and different environmental conditions. So growers who are familiar with a certain hybrid, say from Field GX Family A, other Family A's, they will also be familiar with how to manage those products and what to expect out of performance because they have some familiarity with those products already. So it's a way that we talk about genetic relatedness, but it's also about how we help our growers manage their crop more effectively.
She adds that their Field GX system of hybrids sets them apart from other companies and their corn hybrids.
We're a seed-focused, seed-only type of company, so we're really passionate about getting deep down into the nuance of some of these products and making sure that we fine-tune our approach by using the Field GX language. We can fine-tune our approach on the farm to really manage each hybrid to its peak performance in that environment and under those conditions that it wants to be managed on. So we believe it's a way that we truly do get more bang for the buck as far as what farmers are already buying with their seed decision.
Read more about AgriGold's Field GX system at AgriGold.com. You can also find that link at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer. We've got more farm news on the way. Don't you dare turn that dial. This is Hoosier Ag This Week. Thanks for joining us. I hope you're enjoying your weekend so far. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, and you're listening to Hoosier Ag This Week. We've got the top news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. Owning woodland property in Indiana can be an asset, and it could bring you some extra money to supplement your farm operation. Our C.J. Miller has more.
In many ways, the forest parts of the farm have as much value as the row cropping parts of the farm.
And that's Dan Lynch of Owen County. He's a woodland owner and board member of the Indiana Forestry and Woodland Owners Association, or IFWO for short.
I'm a ninth generation woodland owner in Indiana. Our mixed-use farm in southwest central Indiana is part woodland, part row crop, and we have some cattle operation. The 400 acres that we have is about a third timber, about a third pasture, and about a third row crop. It's rough country. We've got hills and dales that are unfarmable, but they've been cultivated by the family over the years for wood and forestry products.
Lynch says that harvesting the timber from his woodland property is just one revenue stream for his farm.
I've established a pretty good relationship with the hunters that they come in from Indianapolis and hunt the property. The demand for hunting just continues to explode. Cash rent prices for hunting leases are pretty high now. They can be $20 an acre, and when you have a mixed-use farm with a lot of edging, it's thick with deer and turkey. So I've been leasing to the same people for a number of years, and it's a good relationship.
He adds that IFWO has been an outstanding resource along the way.
I constantly am calling people that I've met at IFWO with questions, looking for consulting advice. There's Purdue Ag Extension is very involved, the forestry department at Purdue, the DNR is involved. And so it's a good mix of resources and expertise to help a landowner. Nobody knows everything about these forests, and you can always find somebody that'll help you with your questions about forest, land, water runoff, invasive species, just a number of items.
To learn more about getting the most out of your woodland property, visit ifwoa.org. I'm CJ Miller.
All right, CJ, thanks. From the Indiana woodlands out to Washington, D.C., where keeping Indiana's farmland out of the hands of Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran is the goal of this Washington lawmaker. Sabrina Halverson has the story.
About 3% of agricultural land in the United States is currently owned by foreign entities. But U.S. Senator Kevin Cramer, a Republican from North Dakota, says even that may be too much.
One would think that's not a very high percentage, but it's obviously a lot of acres. And what's somewhat alarming is that how quickly in recent years that acreage has increased. That there's clearly has been a concerted effort in recent years to purchase productive land by foreign entities, particularly China.
Senator Cramer is a co-sponsor of the Farm Act, known in long form as the Foreign Adversary Risk Management Act. He says it's a matter of security on several levels.
I just think for land in particular, we can't grow more. We need to control our own food supply because it's so critical. And then the fact that trade can be such a valuable tool in terms of both world peace and just moral obligation, and we're so darn good at producing food, I think we ought to keep as much of it, you know, in American producers' hands as possible.
The Farm Act would increase the U.S. agriculture industry's role on the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, or CFIUS, which is the government body responsible for overseeing the foreign investment and acquisition of American companies. The agriculture secretary would be brought in on proposed acquisitions that involve agriculture. Cramer says even if the bill never gets to a vote, it has brought awareness to the issue and started discussions on land acquisitions by foreign entities. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
Directors for the United Soybean Board recently met in Niagara Falls as they looked for investments that drive demand for U.S. soy and return value to all U.S. farmers.
Our 77 farmer leader board met and approved a $191.5 million budget for fiscal year 2024. This is our largest ever, and that is in big part due to all the investment from all 515,000 farmers across the United States.
That's Megan Kaiser, United Soybean Board Chair and Missouri farmer.
And so we're putting those funds to use across the entire strategic plan that includes infrastructure and connectivity, health and nutrition, and innovation and technology in both the supply and demand areas, in addition to communications and education.
Kaiser highlights investments made across the demand portfolio in infrastructure and connectivity and health and nutrition.
One is in infrastructure and connectivity and demand. And here we're identifying and addressing infrastructure and logistical constraints, limiting market entry and expansion of existing and new soybean technologies. And we're also exploring innovative soy-based materials, recycling and new processing technologies for soybean oil and meal. In health and nutrition, again, on the demand side, we're conducting research illustrating soy's support across the lifespan for healthy growth, living and aging, and in animal diets, we're continuing to do research to increase inclusion rates.
Kaiser adds that these investments also address innovative technologies in supply, where they're developing new biochemicals and biologicals for pest management. And you can't talk about the United Soybean Board without talking about export promotion and their partnerships with the U.S. Soybean Export Council and the U.S. Meat Export Federation. You can read more on this and any other story we've brought you today at HoosierAgToday.com. And if you missed any of today's show, you can hear it there as well. We'll do it again next weekend, same hat time, same hat channel. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.